We're in California. We're at the pool beside the Sportsman's Lodge, where we're having a chance to chat with Art Hearn, who spent some time in Chicago, I would say, doing some good radio work. And all of you out there in Radio Land who remember running home after school to listen to Captain Midnight will remember Art Hearn as Ichabod Mudd saying,
"Hey, Captain, I'm getting hungry. I want a hamburger."
I really sprung that on you, Art. Gave you no warning at all about that. Welcome. I'm so happy to have you with us on our broadcast today.
Well, thank you very much. But I must say, of course, I was the last one to do Icky.
Well, but you so still were Ichabod Mudd.
Oh, yes. So the last year and 2 years of it.
That's right. You worked with Paul Barnes then, I think.
Paul and I.
Captain Midnight.
Yes,
yeah.
When the change came, it went to half hours.
Yeah, that's right.
Like Paul and I then took the roles.
Yeah. When did you start your radio career?
Well, actually, I think I started back in 1925 in Milwaukee, over WTMJ and WISN. I used to do things. And I came to Chicago in November of 1937. And I also helped organize AFRA, not
AFTRA.
AF, yes. And I'm a pioneer.
Yes. Well, you had you always wanted to be a radio actor?
Well, not necessarily radio, no, because I started out in the theater. My uncle was stage manager of the Schubert Theater in Milwaukee, and I did all the children's, the kid parts at the... at the Schubert Theater in Milwaukee, and at a number of the other houses. So I kind of got into it that way, and I enjoyed it very much. And when radio came along, it looked like that this was going to be a kind of a nice thing to do. And since I enjoyed acting, I just went into it. That's all.
It was another acting.
Oh, yes, of course. Another acting.
It was easier than being on the stage, I suppose, to a degree.
Oh, well, it's an entirely different technique,
right,
of course. And like Jonathan, whose background is a theater also, so is mine, it was easier, I believe, for us to come into radio because in radio, of course, everything is in your imagination. It's all image, you see. And... it helped you, I believe, in your timing, which was the most important thing in radio, is your timing.
Sure.
So those of us who had the stage background, I think, was easier for us to go into radio and move into it and work and earn a living.
Well, in the early days before AFRA, actors on radio programs, I believe, were... often called upon to double and triple parts, right? Three, four, sometimes more.
For nothing.
In other words,
and for almost nothing.
Whatever they were paying you, they get five different parts, maybe.
Unbelievable what were paid in our early days of radio.
Oh, what did you get? Can I ask you what?
Sure, $5 and $6. Once in a while, you were lucky if you got $10 to do a program. It was very, very rugged, and of course those were rough times, depression times. At least, of course, we would go over, be able to get an egg sandwich and a cup of coffee for 15 cents, which
it helped a little.
Kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah.
We'd go out to the Wrigleyville, run across the river, and that was a little cafeteria. We'd go there and time it just right to get there at about 10:45, because they stopped that at 11 o'clock. So it took care of us for a day.
You ever get caught by the bridge being up?
Oh, so many times. As John told you, that's why when George Fogle, who was the director of Moff Perkins for so many, many years, when he came out here, well, they formed that club. He and Lou Loria formed the Bridge Was Up Club, because that was always our excuse. You see, when you were on, when you did work, on Ma Perkins, they did a repeat at NBC. So you went from the Wrigley Building, which was CBS.
Yes.
You had to cross the bridge again to go over to Wacker Drive to go get over to the Merchandise Mart. Well, now you're crossing two bridges, you see.
So there's a good chance one of them is going to be up.
So many times, because there were a couple hours spread there in between, mm-hmm. why you'd might forget it, or you might have an extra drink, as happened occasionally, and you wouldn't make it. So that was the pet excuse, and George would always say, never mind, don't say, I know what you're going to say. Yeah. Bridge was up. So that's how we formed the Bridge Was Up Club here.
But, you know, of all the stories, that I've heard about the bridge being up and narrow misses and all that, most of the time you never missed a show.
No,
people never
very,
missed a show,
very
right?
rare. No, this was a yeah. very rare occasion.
Yeah. You
very
might have rare. Missed a last run-through before the show or something like that. But, you know, everybody was a pro, weren't they? They knew
oh,
how
very
they,
much
they
so.
They could step in, even if they hadn't seen the script before, they could really do it.
Well, I tell you, I had to do that in Chicago mm-hmm. because our time was very tight. We didn't have all of the times that some of the New York casts had.
Uh-huh.
Chicago was very cost conscious. And believe me, we had as little rehearsal time as possible. So you had to know your business. And it was a marvelous training for an actor because you had to do so many things and do them well, you know. So it was great training.
You did many things. You appeared on soap operas, a couple of soap operas for Erna Phillips that she wrote, didn't you?
Yes,
I understand you were on The Road of Life and Today's Children.
Yeah. Today's Children was my best.
Uh-huh.
I did the role of Joseph, who was the imposter, Bob Perkins' son, had passed away, and I was his buddy, and I always wanted a family, so I took his place, so to speak.
And on the Ma Perkins.
Not Ma Perkins.
Well, you said Ma Perkins' son passed away.
Well, she did the lead on isn't that awful?
On Today's Children?
On Today's Children, yeah. That was her other show.
Oh, Virginia Payne's.
Virginia Payne.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Thank you,
I see.
My
okay.
dear friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, and so I had a long run on that for about a year and a half at lead with that. It was a good series.
Did you get?
I enjoyed that very
did
much.
You get a lot of letters from the listening audience.
Lots of them. We had a lot of publicity. It was fun working in Chicago. We were like one big family. You didn't have this rapport when you came out here to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely different. Entirely different. We had a wonderful group of people, and I made some very dear friends and we still have today.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. It was a really great thing.
Well, you did a lot of nice work in Chicago.
Well, I did a lot. My pet, of course, was Captain Midnight. I was on that for 13 years. And, it was fun working.
You said you were icky the last couple of years, but you did all kinds of other things.
Yeah, I did. I was Ivan Sharp's right-hand man.
Oh, you was a Nazi then, right?
You know. Well, I did. No, he wasn't a Nazi. He was.
No?
I did a lot of those too on Jack. I did a lot of Nazis on Jack Armstrong and all the kids. See, I did all the kids shows.
Yeah.
We did the four of them. Were done right within a radius. Some of them right across the hall from each other at WGN.
Yes,
and at NBC. And very often I'd run from one studio to the other.
Mm-hmm.
At one time I was doing 22 radio shows a week.
Holy
I hired a car to take me from NBC over to CBS, and I run across the street to WGN back. It was.
Yeah, let me think now.
It was a lot of fun.
Got the calculator out here. 20 radio shows a week at $5 a show. You were making $100 a week.
Well, no, I was doing a little better than that. When they were paying $5, I wasn't getting much work, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's right, I know.
That $5 we used to get, the barn dance, WLS, the barn dance, would do locals also there. And that's where we got the $5 for doing these local commercials.
Oh, you would do commercials on the barn dance, I see.
Yeah, where they'd cut away like Murphy's Cut Cost Concentrate and all this.
Oh, sure, because it was on the Clear Channel WLS, and they were
doing all the
rural audiences.
Right, right, yeah. We'd go backstage at one of the theaters in Chicago. I can't think right now.
8th Street Theater was where the barn
came from. 8th, correct,
yeah.
You're right.
Did you...
She knows more than I do.
No, you've forgotten more than I'll ever know, I'll tell you that.
Well, I worked all practically every radio show that ever came out of Chicago.
I bet you did. Yeah.
Well, I've been on it.
WGN had some big productions there that the Colonel McCormick was involved with.
Well,
Theater of the Air.
Theater of the Air, we did.
Some of those.
Oh, I was on that pretty regularly.
Yeah.
They had Theater of the Air.
A dramatic cast and a musical
cast.
Mm-hmm.
And, we did some marvelous productions.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Really great. And the Colonel was quite a character. He was quite a guy.
Did the cast ever come in contact, much contact with Colonel McCormick?
Well, he always, yes, because you see, he gave us, he talked on every show.
Yes.
So he was there. He'd
but
walk in at
he
time.
Had much contact?
Oh,
with
no, as such, no.
He didn't say,
no.
Art's
no, no, say,
to
Art, how about coming over and having coffee with me? No, he never invited me. But I admired him. He was a brilliant man, and it's a great character.
I have a note that says you were on one of the last of the kids' adventure shows that come out of Chicago or anywhere, Silver Eagle. The Mountie, produced by Jim Jewell.
Jim Jewell, yeah. Jim was a wonderful guy, and I loved him much, but he and I didn't get along very well. Jim was very hard to work with some people, and I was one of them, I guess. He'd blow up too many times, and I couldn't stand that. So I walked away a few times.
But you were on
Jim,
that show.
Yes, yeah. Well, I did other work for Jim, too. Yeah, he came from Detroit, you know, really, Jim. Very brilliant guy. Had a lot of pain because he had back problems for years.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of helped to irritate.
Your voice, though well-known to Chicago and network radio listeners, gave you the opportunity to have someone come up to you and say, on the street, for example, or in a restaurant, and say, I know who you are because I can see you. They could recognize the voice, but they wouldn't see you until you went into television.
Until I went into TV. That's correct. Well, you're right about that.
Yeah, right.
Because I did a whole series of shows at WGN for GN themselves, too, that I did for the Tribune. And when they inaugurated their new, entertainment section that they put out a separate section.
Uh-huh.
They did a great big show that we did for them that I worked. We just did a lot. I also at WGN had a show called Mystery House that ran for 4 years. That was a big. We had an audience every Saturday night
at
the Wrigleyville, in the big studio.
Yeah.
At this, this was radio, where we did original mystery stories. It was called Mystery House.
That was probably over the Mutual Network then, right?
Yes.
You did a GN in the the big studio where the operators.
In our big studio, was a very popular show and one we enjoyed doing. It was a great show.
Now you were best known to TV viewers as you had a youngster kids program.
I had a show called The Pied Piper Television. And it was a good show. It was the early days of TV. And again, I'm going to say that when we did a TV show in Chicago, and we had 15 minutes rehearsal time, New York people were getting an hour's rehearsal time, So again, you had to really be on your toes. It was a really tough situation. That's about all we'd had. And when I started out, in the Pied Piper. Prior to that, I had did a show for National Food Stores, which at that time was National Tea, and I was Natco the Clown for them.
Yes, Natco the Clown.
You could have that was a great Kids Carnival Quiz was a popular show, but in that show, when I first took it over, we were doing 10 commercials, 10 commercials at a half hour. Finally, got down to 5, which was better. But now, you imagine when you're allowed 15 minutes, maybe, or camera time, rehearsal time, to do these commercials. It was frantic, you know, really. And I did it 5 days a week.
Incredible.
When
were you working
I was doing
cards?
That. I was doing that. Not too long. Yes. It was that helped us a lot. But a lot of it, you see, you had to ad-lib a lot.
Sure, yeah.
Sure, you had to memorize the bulk of of the commercial, yeah. The important parts of it. But it is rough. I remember one time I was doing a cracker commercial. And you see, I should have known better, of course. You never take a cracker and bite into it, you know, and then try to speak right after. Believe you me. Well, I went through murder for that fact.
Those are wonderful days, though, of live television.
Oh, they were just
radio.
Great, yeah. Wonderful things. Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. I remember that getting the busiest time of my career, I got laryngitis.
Oh,
and I had just gotten a new part on a recorded show. And they had to rewrite the script to say that I got an attack of laryngitis. I could hardly talk. Now, this went on for 6 weeks.
Oh, my.
6 weeks, 5 days a week. And here I am doing all these 20 shows or something. You know, I could hardly talk, including my TV show, which started. It was murder. That's when I quit smoking.
Ah. And never a laryngitis attack since then, is that right?
No. No, I never did. Yeah. It came, my voice came back a week later, and it was great. Whether it was the smoking, you know, or not, I don't know. But
it might have had it.
Had something to do with
well,
it.
Well, anyway. I'm glad you're still stopped smoking, right?
Oh, yes, okay. And that's 30-some years ago.
Okay. Well, you did it before it became fashionable.
Oh, well, yeah. They were just starting to, you know, yeah, they were just starting that.
Yeah.
But I remember we were talking with Cup about that. You know, uh-huh. How's Cup?
He's
you
fine.
Can see him?
He's fine.
He give him my very
yeah,
best.
He's
a very,
strong.
Very, very dear friend of mine. We used to have studios together, side by side, when he started out in TV with he and Essie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they're wonderful people.
Well, you're a nice guy, too.
Well, how very nice of you. Thank you so much.
We're glad that you stopped a couple of minutes on a sunny afternoon to say hello.
I hope you tell her back there at the museum to take good care of my Pied Piper Prince that I turned over to.
Yeah, I must say, we're delighted to have that as part of the museum collection because... Well, you are now a museum piece.
Well, my son was very happy to get rid of him because he was storing him for me in his cocktail lounge. Well,
thank you very much, Art Hearn. We really appreciate the chance.
Pleasure.
To
Thanks a lot.